This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Blog on the Pod, the episode where our authors have written a blog recently and we aim to expand on it. This being the season of Halloween, unless you've been hiding in a witch's cabin somewhere, it'll come as no surprise that markets have spooked investors of late. With risk aversion high, levels of illiquidity have been on the rise. But what do we mean by the term liquidity in general? Why does it dry up in times of market stress? And what can it tell us about the state of financial markets more generally? I'm Frances Watson, Content Manager, and I'm delighted to be joined by Emil van den Heiligenberg, Head of Asset Allocation, who hopefully has some of the answers to my questions. Emil, welcome to the pod.
Hi, Frances. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. And thanks for joining. I know it's been a tough time for you. So I'm hoping having a chat, we'll drag you away from those Bloomberg screens. Now, should we kick off then, Emil, with an actual definition of liquidity? I mean, how do we measure it? And why is it so important for investors?
So there are various ways of measuring liquidity. You can think about things like daily turnover or depth of the order book. That means sort of how much buy or sell orders are available at which price, bid offer spreads. So is there a big difference between the price you get when you want to sell something or the price you need to pay when you want to buy something? There is sort of things like the average mispricing or the average versus fair value, these kind of things. So there's various ways where you can measure liquidity. We think, and we'll come to that later, we think liquidity is pretty awful at the moment. But the most important question is, why is it so important for investors? Investors who trade in securities, they trade in those securities with the expectation and trust that the markets will trade fairly and functionally, that market pricing is fair and transparent, and they get a reasonable price when they want to sell something. So that's in that trust, they then are able to manage risk and put on a decent investment with the confidence that they can sell that later on at a reasonable price. If that stops happening, so if you're no longer able to get your money out of the markets at a reasonable price, that's where sort of the accidents stand to happen. And it massively erodes confidence of investors.
It is all about confidence, isn't it, markets? And the thing is, you mentioned, Emil, that liquidity is pretty awful at the moment. I'm just thinking, if we look back historically, how does it compare with things like the onset of COVID? When was that, March 2020? Or I suppose even further back, the global financial crisis of, 8-9?
Yeah. Yeah, we look at several liquidity indicators, and on top of that, we have real-time information by talking to our trading desk. We have an excellent view on sort of what's happening at the moment, real-time, in markets. And if you look at those indicators or talk to the trading desk, then to my astonishment, in a way, is liquidity is now as bad as it was during the peak of the COVID crisis. And you have to keep in mind that at the COVID crisis, big risk takers, big prop desks were sort of starting to work from home. And perhaps even top traders who can own a lot of risk and can help you move around a lot of risk were falling ill. So desks were hardly manned at some point. It was a surprise to me when I look at those indicators that liquidity is almost as bad as it is in 2008. In the global financial crisis, the liquidity was even worse. And that's in a way, somewhat of a relief, because bad liquidity tends to feed on itself. But there's one thing which is, I think, important for the listeners, which is it's slightly different now than it was in history, because at the moment, the Fed is still squeezing liquidity. So we have bad liquidity at the moment, but the Fed is actually still on a mission to reduce inflation. And how do they do that? They typically do that by raising interest rates, which is decreasing liquidity in markets. That's unusual. usually when we see a liquidity squeeze, the Fed, the central banks come in to help. Eh? To some extent, the Bank of England came in recently to help markets. Fed is not doing that, which would mean probably markets get even more illiquid going forward.
Yeah, because we are in that phase of liquidity tightening. And I wonder then, is that a factor that I read in a survey the other day, Emil, that portfolio managers are now holding their highest levels of cash since 2001. And I just wonder, is there a direct correlation then, do you reckon, between liquidity tightening and portfolio managers typically holding more cash?
Yes, I would say that that's a fair assessment. This is definitely one of the factors for fund managers to decide to hold more cash. And it's also important to realize that it sort of feeds on itself as well. If you have an illiquid situation, markets are illiquid, that makes fund managers nervous when they sort of tend in expectations of, for instance, outflows, and if they are nervous, they are inclined to hold more cash. During market crises, capital becomes scarce, investors start to focus on capital preservation, and volatility rises, and traders are less willing to take risk. So the willingness to deploy capital diminishes when markets become more illiquid. And that also, for me as a fund manager, that also makes sense. If I think I can trade my portfolio, or let's say 90% of my portfolio within a day, 100% of my portfolio in a week, and those time intervals start to extend itself to longer and longer, I need to start to raise more cash to be prudent. So in case some of my clients would ask money back, I am able to do that in a reasonable way at a reasonable price.
And I suppose it goes back to that level of confidence, isn't it? How much you exactly. have confidence in you. So given what you've said so far then, and that all makes sense to me, is there typically a time when the market is more illiquid than at other times against the background of the economic cycle? Is illiquidity a function of a particular time, if you like, in the economic cycle?
There are probably three events which could lead to a liquidity squeeze. And I'll try to give an example of each of them. So the first one is a credit event. People might remember in 1998, LTCM, long-term capital management, was a leveraged hedge fund which defaulted. That in itself, even though the cycle was fine, that in itself triggered a scare in markets, because who owns risk towards LTCM? So that meant people got scared of that. So that meant less risk-taking, less risk budget to trade. And therefore, you immediately got a dry up of liquidity because of a credit event. The second factor is almost like an outside market factor. I think everyone who lived through it, and I definitely lived through it, the 9/11 attacks on the World Trade Center in New York. That is an outside event where even the New York Stock Exchange closed for the day and actually didn't reopen for the entire week, but the whole financial system closed, and some of the trading desks in New York, based in New York, for instance, didn't switch on for quite a while, simply because some of them are actually in the World Trade Towers. That's an outside factor where immediately, even though it might not have little impact in London, immediately you see sort of that whole maelstrom of liquidity going over the globe. It gets interrupted. There is unpriceable risk in markets, and people are reluctant to take on more risk and are actually quickly seeking to reduce risk. And then the last one, and this is arguably the one that happens the most and the one we are currently in, is indeed when we are late in the economic cycle, so close to a recession, Usually it happens a little bit later, closer to a recession. That's probably unique in the current cycle. But late cycle, you sort of see with liquidity reducing as well.
That's interesting. So you say we're late in the economic cycle. I mean, maybe you could just give us other characteristics that are associated with being late in the economic cycle, but also, and perhaps more importantly, Emil, how do you position in your strategies for a late cycle?
Yeah, so a classic economic cycle ends by inflation. And that's what you see currently in the system. I mean, everyone, as you said, you have to live in a cave if you're not sort of aware that things in the street, rents, energy, eating out, your groceries are getting way, way more expensive. Central banks have the job to manage inflation, and they are committed, and they continuously tell us that they are committed to manage inflation down. Now, some people say they might have lost control, but I think part of those inflation pressures coming out of COVID have been inevitable. But how do the central banks do that? Is by raising rates and actually to sort of decrease demand and increase unemployment a little bit. And that's what's happening at the moment. That's what we call late cycle, because very often the raising rates of central banks leads to a recession. It doesn't necessarily lead to a recession. There could be, as most optimistic scenario, a soft landing. But usually, let's say 9 out of 10, it leads to a recession-like scenario. And our positioning and our portfolios are positioned for that. On the one hand, a lot of pessimism is already priced. That's one of the reasons why we have such low liquidity. But on the other hand, the investment environment isn't favorable. It's liquidity, we already talked about. It's the odds of a recession. It's earnings expectations, which are still too high and we think have to come down. So that means you will see profit warnings of individual companies going forward, and actually CEOs of companies kitchen sinking all their problems into earnings announcements. In our view, there is also a high geopolitical risk. Think about the war between Ukraine and Russia. So we are cautiously positioned in portfolio. What does that mean? That means, for instance, we are short credit exposure, so corporate bonds. We're short commodities. We're actually neutral equities at the moment, but listeners will notice that sort of the S&P is rallying a little bit, and we would be sellers of the equity markets on strength. So if equity markets would rally a little bit into year end, we would sell that rally because we think there is more bad news to come.
More bad news to come. Well, even more than we've had already this year. But look, I'm a bit confused now, because you come across as you're cautiously positioned, as you say, for the late cycle. But one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you as well, Emil, was because of your famous Heiligenberg index. And if people don't know that, let me just tell you what it is. I think the main aim is to detect the presence of bubbles in markets. Is that right?
Yeah.
So now you're saying that the index is actually rising, which would suggest to me that there are more bubbles in the system. But I kind of thought every single bubble across every single asset class had burst already. I mean, how is that, Emil? Can you describe what's happening right now?
Francis, I have to be honest, and it's frustrating. that's what it is. The Heiligenberg index is constructed to give us an early warning on bubbles. And at the moment, a weird thing is happening. Markets are deflating, as you say, and the bubble, and then the Heiligenberg index is rising, indeed pointing towards a higher risk of a bubble. I really have to look at what's driving that, and sort of perhaps look at indicators which are more, have become over time more coincidental than actually forward looking, and sort of see whether I need to increase the forward-looking element of the index. But what I learned from this is a few things. I think the current drawdown cannot be classified really as a deflating bubble. I know some pundits in the market and on TV are talking very interestingly and very passionately about this is a bubble and when the bubble is bursting. But if you look at, like I do, over 30 different indicators, I don't think there is enough market exuberance. So like this is a new world, this is this growth, expectations of growth going into infinitum, that there's not enough exuberance that needs to deflate. Huh? It's also weird that a bubble emerges when investors in general have low confidence and are so cautious as they are. So I believe that we are almost in a textbook cyclical bear market. So a bear market driven by the economic cycle, not by a deflating bubble. And why does it matter? Is because the magnitude of the drawdown is usually bigger when it's a bubble that is deflating than when it's a pure cyclical recession. So one of the glimmers of hope I see for 2023 is that because there is little bubble to deflate, the drawdown you see in markets might actually be not as big as, for instance, 2008 or even around 2000 when the tech bubble needed to correct.
So if I understand correctly what you're saying that the rate of decline is less than we've had in previous really sharp up and sharp, you know, swings like the GFC or, you know, 1987 crash. Crumbs, I just about remember that one, Emil. Okay, and maybe we should have you on again later on next year to see how that index is behaving. So now, look, I mean, we've taken up a lot of your time, and sorry about that, but it is the season of Halloween, and I can't let you go without, I'm going to say, in your view, of course, Emil, are investors, do you think, are they likely to encounter tricks or treats for the remainder of 2022? You've kind of answered my question, but look, any treats we're in line for?
So unfortunately, this is a podcast, so listeners cannot see my skeleton suit I'm wearing for the occasion. you guessed me right. I'm afraid markets will play tricks. We think there is bad news to come in a way, and if there is a rally and to the end of this year, we think that's one to sell. I think the treats are actually perhaps for Halloween 2023, when markets can look through a recession, and then probably there is some room for optimism.
Okay, well, on that note, let's write off this Halloween, but look forward to the next. Emil, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on LGIM Talks. And thank you to all our listeners. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are by their nature subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2022. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.